Boomer Radio on Freedom 95 with your host, Julie Patterson.
Welcome to the show. Happy Saturday. Glad that you have tuned in, because today is going to be a very exciting show. You know, in January, we all know that you make those resolutions. Sometimes you stick with them, sometimes you don't. But it's easier to stick with those kind of eating goals and if you have some guidance, some direction. So our guest today has written a wonderful book. Because I'm a runner, I love it. But you don't have to be a runner to understand this book at all. It's called Finish Line Fueling, An Essential Guide to Runner's Nutrition. Our guest is the author, Jackie Dykus. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Julie. Thanks for having me.
First of all, let's explain what the letters mean after your name. I've got RD.
Yes, I'm a registered dietitian.
Then we've got the CSSD.
Yeah, it means I'm certified as a sports dietitian.
Oh, nice. And then the CLT.
I'm certified as a leak therapist, which is a specialty in food sensitivity.
Oh, wow. You know, I don't know if there's more food sensitivities these days, or we just didn't know about it back then. What do you think?
No, I'm not sure. Either way, I think we're just gaining more insight into that it's something that people can manage and we can help figure it out.
Well, I read your book, and the first thing I thought is it's a really thoughtful book. And that's
Thank
a compliment.
It
is.
That. Yes.
You, the way you've written it, it's an easy read, I will say. For me, it's got, not only does it just talk about, well, let's just kind of start at the beginning. You talk about quality of life goals. So I want our listeners to think about that as well. When you talk about quality of life goals, you started with yourself when you wrote the book, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I you know, it's kind of my personal motto, if you will. Over the years, I feel like everything just comes down to what each individual person wants out of their quality of life. And that ranges very much from one person to the next. From just know that in the book I mentioned, just getting out of bed and knowing you got to get out of bed and get in your workout for the day. But you know, long term, it's going to help you meet your quality of life goals. So it kind of drives your decision. And, you know, I feel like any relationship with food also comes down to quality of life goals. When we're talking about, you know, eating something in the moment because it satisfies a social aspect, or really feeling what your body needs and feeling based on how your body feels good or doesn't feel good. So there's lots of ways to kind of equate quality of life goals.
And sometimes it's about time. I mean, people, you know, let's face it, they eat fast food because it's easy and quick and they can just drive through.
Yeah, you know what, though? I would like to encourage, I know that time can be a constraint, but I think when there's proper planning ahead, if we look at what our quality of life goals drive us in different ways, we can plan ahead for those situations and prepare the foods that really make us feel great versus feeling like we have to run through that drive-through at the last minute. So I don't know. I'd like to encourage proper planning ahead can help you still make great choices despite time constraints.
No, I agree with you. And there's still people that, despite how busy they are, they'll take the time to meal plan and shop from their list. And I don't know that that's the right way, but I know when my kids...
Yeah, you know, there's lots of ways to look at it. You know, I can't deny I'm not the person who's driven from lists myself. For me, planning ahead means that when I'm making, when I have time to make a meal, instead of making four sweet potatoes, because we're a family of four, I might make eight. So I have four extra potatoes for lunch, dinner the next day. Or I might, instead of making two hard-boiled eggs, I'll make eight because I know I can keep them in the fridge for a couple of days and the whole family can eat off of them. So for me, planning ahead just means I'm making more in the time I have so that in other instances, I can grab the brown rice I made the night before and throw it in a dish and have that prepared or ready to go, or even just having it ahead to make another meal the next night. So for me, that's planning ahead, not necessarily working from lists as much, but there's no right or wrong answer at all.
No, that makes sense, because if you're making it, you know, adding, you know, a couple more eggs to the boiling water is not that difficult. So I like the way
easy.
You look at that.
Yeah. You know, with my book, I try to just, that's one example of, I just try to keep things practical because, you know, at the end of the day, it's hard to be perfect with every aspect of your life. So I just try to keep in relation to even those quality of life goals, how can we make food and mealtime feel practical, manageable, easy, yet healthy, nutritious, and fueling?
The book is called Finish Line Fueling, An Essential Guide to Runner's Nutrition. I've devoured it because I am a runner and it's fascinating to me, but I really believe that anybody could pick this book up and learn from it and fuel their body a little better for whatever goals they have.
that was a target I went for. My thought process is whether you're running a mile a week, a walker, or not running at all versus someone who's really competitive. I think there's something, just at least a foundation of eating that can be taken away. And like the first half of the book really is a lot of those foundational concepts. And the second half of the book is really recipes that help drive those concepts. And again, I tried to keep those recipes super practical, mm-hmm. easy, a lot of staple ingredients you might just have in your cabinet. Not feel like you're really searching for anything unique at the grocery store.
Let's talk about, you know, the first part of the book, as you mentioned. I know, you know, here's something everybody can relate to, avoiding monotony, right?
Yes. A lot of people eat the same thing every day.
Mm-hmm. I'm one of those people, but I try to mix it up. But there's just certain things you like. Do you, you know, your book kind of showed me, too, that sometimes the body is drawn to certain foods or flavors because it may need that.
For a reason, absolutely. And I think a lot of times people, you know, just like you mentioned before, time constraints, they get too busy to really listen. But yes, and you know, overall, I think if you have like a staple of grocery items that you keep on hand that make you feel good, that's one thing. And really, I drive even that concept with some grocery lists. Mm-hmm. But within that, we still want some level of variety. If you're always eating the exact same thing every single day, you're likely to be confined to only the nutrients from those foods. So I like to encourage, even if anything, just kind of a three-day rotation where we're at least working in a few different items, maybe based off that grocery list I gave as one example. Mm-hmm. But to rotate that a little bit, at least within a few days, that way we know we're varying the nutrient quality you gain from your diet.
And you know, you're a schooled individual. Isn't it always better to get those nutritional components from a food source as opposed to vitamins? I'm not knocking vitamins, but...
You know, they both have a really great role. For some people, they might need to fall back to vitamins from time to time, even to fill. You know, sometimes there's just nutrients they fall off on, and they need to inch back up. And then ultimately, I'd love for food to be the driving force. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned different strategies in my book to help you monitor, you know, what kind of quality is your diet? Is your diet chronically low in zinc? If it is, someone might need a supplement for a short time, but at the end of the day, they should be driven with the goal to achieve foods higher in zinc in their diet. Maybe they start eating mussels once a week, and that can really shoot their zinc levels up. But yeah, there's definitely strategies driven through whole food that I would aim for any person to strive for most often.
You talk about the five key fundamental fueling components, and they're pretty simple.
Yeah, you know, I think they're very simple, but, you know, you would not believe how many people do not know their sources or even think about it at mealtime. But really, the five components are quality carbohydrates, lean protein, healthy fat, I say antioxidants, but how big, beautiful, and colorful can you make your diet, mm-hmm. which would make it rich in antioxidants, and then where's your water? So those are the five elements I really try to educate on.
You mentioned strategies. You talked about the three-day rotation. Can you speak to just some simple strategies that just our listeners might utilize to just eat a little better, eat a little healthier?
Yeah, you know, one first strategy is I would say to see how often someone can rotate with vegetables, or even just for some people it might be a blue ribbon moment to have vegetables land on the plate. But anytime you can work vegetables into any meal, I think that would be a fantastic life-changing goal. So let's say breakfast, instead of just making scrambled eggs, we maybe have scrambled eggs with spinach and work in vegetables that way. But that would be one example, is to work in ingredients like that. In terms of specifically the three-day rotation, someone could easily have maybe eggs one day and oatmeal the next day, and maybe the third day they have some type of yogurt and muesli or something like that. Mm-hmm. But those are examples of how to rotate among 3 days.
I like that. And it gives you some variety?
Yes, absolutely. Really, it offers such a variety of nutrients. I find when someone, you know, sticks to either, I don't know if bland is the word, but let's say someone just eats a basic piece of toast every day when they're walking out the door, and that's their same routine. We can kind of, you know, we can guesstimate how much they might be lacking with that type of breakfast, especially if it's a slice of just white bread with a little butter on top.
Yeah.
And there's really ways we can enhance that meal.
Yeah. And I think it's education. Some people just don't think about it. I knew a person once who switched from cola to Sprite because they thought it didn't have calories. And
oh,
yes, because it was clear. I know, it's laughable. This was an educated.
I agree. There is just education, and sometimes people just need a little nudge and reminder. I know. Yeah. There's been times in my life that I've worked with people who had, you know, ice cream sandwiches for breakfast or Twinkies or whatever it is, and you know, sometimes it's just, you know, kind of cupcakes. A reality check. And you know, when you're younger, maybe you ignore that a little bit more. And as we get older, we tend to listen to our bodies and appreciate what we've been given. So, you know, education, just kind of looking what's out there and exploring how you can make the best of what you have.
You have a lot of good information in this book about people who may, how food, I don't know how I'm saying this, you know, say you have a headache or your nose drips all the time, or how food can maybe be a trigger for some of the symptoms you're having and you don't even know it.
Absolutely. That's where kind of my food sensitivity background comes in. And instead of calling out food sensitivity specifically, I kind of just try to educate people on how to clues their body might be telling them in terms of what they're eating. But yeah, a lot of times I just sum that up as to someone who might have an overactive immune system, and food can be one tool that we can use to help calm the immune system down. So by eating low inflammatory foods, we can kind of calm the immune system down and support that process. And one way is someone might not notice that, you know, every time they eat this bowl of oatmeal, their nose just drips like crazy. Well, I would ask them to step back a second and break down the components of that bowl of oatmeal, because there's probably an ingredient in there that's kind of triggering or inflammatory to their immune system at this time, and maybe just to cut it for several months, and they can bring it back most likely in different doses at different times and things like that. But if they're habitually doing it like that mundane, monotony person having that exact same breakfast every morning, and we know it reacts with their immune system, that could be a big change for that person.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, the connection between food and performance and how your body reacts, because I don't think people always put two and two together that way.
I agree. Yes, but the more we get that out there and yes, kind of make people more aware of the symptoms they could experience related to food, hopefully they'll feel like they're achieving a better quality of life.
Very good. We are talking to Jackie Dykus. She's written the book Finish Line Fueling, An Essential Guide to Runner's Nutrition. We're going to be right back. I want to ask her, what are some examples of those low inflammatory foods? We'll talk about her recipes and oh so much more. So keep it right here on Freedom 95. We'll be right back.
Boomer Radio with Julie Patterson continues right after the break. This is Boomer Radio on Freedom 95.
All right, welcome back. We are talking to author Jackie Dykus. She's a registered dietitian and so much more. The book is called Finish Line Fueling, An Essential Guide to Runner's Nutrition. Where can we get the book, Jackie? Is it available at Amazon?
Yeah, it's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books a Million, and through my publisher, Skyhorse Publishing.
Okay, terrific, terrific. When we left our last segment, you had mentioned, you know, you've got the food sensitivity education, and you mentioned low inflammatory foods. What do you mean by that, and what are some examples?
You know, it's amazing. With my specialty, I actually offer blood tests that explores 150 different foods and chemicals, and really it's a snapshot of each person's immune system at that time and how foods respond to each person. And it's fascinating. So one person might have a reaction to carrots or spinach, and another person it might be beef or dairy or some of the more common ones sometimes people associate with a low inflammatory food. But each person really is very unique in terms of that specific aspect. Sure, we've got kind of a base of low inflammatory foods that research has supported as kind of a whole for the general population, like avocado and sweet potatoes and brown rice.
Okay.
So those are some examples, but really I like to say each person has their own individual story, and depending how reactive their immune system is, just about anything could be reactive in a person if they have a very overactive immune system.
So a snapshot of the immune system, that is fascinating. You can do that with a blood test.
It really is. So what we do with that test is we'd want someone to start the diet soon after it, because it's really how they respond. Immune system responds in that moment. So if you started the diet 3 months later, it wouldn't have quite the same benefit, because immune system actually changes over time. But so we have a glimpse of that immune system, and we eat off the foods that are lowest inflammatory and it really supports calming the immune system down.
Wow, that's cool. You, I'm switching gears here now. The way you've written your book is not like a lot of things I've read, which is a good thing. So, you know, I'm used to hearing about good carbs and bad carbs. You call them fast carbs and slow carbs. Is there a reason for that? I like it.
Yeah, you know, I think I just wanted things to be easy to communicate for people. Because I think when you say complex and not, I don't
know, like,
I feel like people get confused. Mm-hmm, and when we say fast carbs, a lot of times I feel like it's easier to associate that with sugars and things your body utilizes real quick, and slow carbs and things that your body, it takes time to break down. And usually slow carbs I encourage including a source of fiber with slow carbs. But my goal was just to keep it really simple, that even the high school runner who's reading this book can really appreciate how to apply it to their diet.
I love that. And as a runner, you know, you're used to these terms, but you also know that on race morning, you need the faster carbs because they need to get to your system so you can use them, right?
Yes, which makes that concept hit home even more. That fast carbs is something you want to utilize to run fast, especially for distances over about 60 to 90 minutes. We need those fast carbs to keep you going at a fast pace. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, absolutely.
I like also you cover in your book the different cravings that people have. For example, you know, if you crave sweets, maybe you're not getting enough carbs. Wasn't that kind of what you mentioned in there?
Yes. Absolutely. There can be other reasons, but I found in my experience that could be a big one. And I run into a lot of athletes that they feel great all day, and then, you know, they get in their training maybe the early end of the day, and by the evening they feel like they want to raid the cabinets of the sugary cereals or the sleeve of cookies, and they associate guilt with it. But I find if they drive more of a quality carb-driven diet that first half of the day, include more sweet potatoes, maybe brown rice, the whole grain pastas, whatever suits their fancy, but better quality carbs at the beginning half of the day, they'll feel much more sustained the latter half and not be reaching for the less ideal carbs.
You know, I'm one of those, I'd rather have salty than sweet, and your book opened my eyes to the fact that those salty cravings are probably due to maybe a low electrolyte balance, like I'm not getting enough during the day. Kind of what you just said, right?
Yeah, it absolutely could be, especially if during the summer months you feel driven by salt a little bit more. It could also communicate maybe a greater need to hydrate, especially during your runs. That might help. And then every once in a while, there's still the athlete that maybe they're pushing the cusp of overtraining and too many stressors, and that could be an indication their body's just overstressed at the time, and maybe reducing some things in their life could lower that stress response and reduce the craving for salt too. So there's a number of reasons, but the most simplified approach in the book is definitely for those moments where maybe you're doing a hard treadmill workout and you just sweat buckets and you want something salty. It could equate to more fluid and electrolyte.
Yeah, I feel like I'm just dehydrated all the time anyway.
Yes.
So you mentioned stress, and that has to do with your cortisol balance, right, or levels?
Yeah, that is one way that stress is monitored for athletes, yeah.
Is there a way to check that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's you know, probably the most accurate way I would recommend is through a saliva testing, where it's tested at four different points in the day. But, you know, there's some great access to tools. Like, I know one that's growing in popularity is called Inside Tracker, and it's a full blood panel that athletes utilize that does include at least a cortisol test through that. And if that's found to be high, that could be an indicator that you might want to explore your cortisol levels more and adjust your body stress, or work at adjusting your body stress response.
And you know, I think sometimes you can't help it if you're stressed. I mean,
yeah, no, you're right. But for the training athlete, sometimes it could be overtraining. And then you need to cut back.
And you get those overuse injuries, all that stuff.
Yeah. And for the person who, let's say they're not a runner and they're reading this book, it could mean, you know, unfortunately, I know that work stressors and things like that and just life stressors can get in the way, but it does bring to a point that those stressors need to be addressed, because really chronically elevated cortisol over a long span of time is not good for your health too. It fluctuates throughout the day, and there's a normal range of up and down that should be within. But if someone's chronically elevated and chronically high with that stress response, that can be damaging to their overall health.
Yeah. And you have some good information in here about that. You also mentioned in your book, an app. I've got them all on my phone. I'm looking at them. I got my Fitness Pal. I've got Lose It. I've got my Play. but I downloaded the one you suggested because it's very different. It's called Chronometer. Is that how you say it?
Yes, and it's spelled C-R-O-N-O-M-E-T-E-R. It's not spelled quite as it sounds, but I think the app is a great tool. I normally am not the type to recommend a whole lot of those other apps you just mentioned, because I feel like it just drives strictly just a calorie exercise in and out based diet. And I feel like properly fueling is so much more than that. And Chronometer takes it a step further, and it tells you about the micronutrients you're getting. So it'll give you an idea of how much magnesium you're getting every day, vitamin D, zinc, omega-3s. It gives a much bigger picture. So my goal is that at the end of the night, if someone's doing an app like that, you know, MyFitnessPal might show you have 50 calories, so someone grabs some 50 rolls, where Chronometer might say, oh, you've got some room left to eat more, and you're low in omega-3, so maybe someone will grab a few walnuts, and it will spike up that omega-3 content or that omega-3 value.
I feel like it's a better for accountability as well as,
oh, good.
Yeah, don't you? And you can see so much more with it too. And it's a free app, by the way.
Yeah, or is it free? I thought it was a couple dollars.
I didn't pay for mine.
Since I knew.
I didn't pay for it.
Wonderful.
There's probably upgrades. Like mine does have run the commercials, like very tiny in the middle. I don't care. That doesn't bother me.
I see. Yeah. Well, you know, and someone doesn't have to use it chronically. I'm not the type of person that's really say, oh, you got to calculate every last thing you eat in a day. But I do think it helps to every once in a while get a snapshot of, hey, you know, I'm always getting these injuries training. Maybe I should take a look at my diet, and they might find out, you know what, I'm never getting enough zinc. And zinc plays a huge role in tissue repair. It has many roles.
Who knew?
If someone knows their zinc is chronically low, well, if they worked at striving for those nutrients that boost their zinc, they can Google it real quick, what foods are high in zinc, then I feel like they've got a better accurate or a more accurate picture of how they can really strive at moving forward with goals to achieve that zinc level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. I'm flipping now to your recipes, and you break it down so simply. I love it. There's breakfast, there's lunch, there's snacks. And you incorporate some interesting spices. There's the turmeric egg scramble. Tell me why you like these certain spices in our foods.
Yeah, and in the book I mention why there's a few ingredients that people may not be as familiar with, but why I incorporate them. Turmeric has some wonderful anti-inflammatory properties. So just flipping a little turmeric in your egg, I'd love for people to take advantage of those properties just as part of their morning meal. So maybe it'll help reduce kind of those anti-inflammatory over-the-counter drugs or you know, something along those lines by just incorporating natural anti-inflammatories through their food.
Yeah, and that's really, you figure you just put a sprinkle of this and a sprinkle of that every now and then to get those important components in your food into your diet. It's a no-brainer.
Yes, I agree. It's just a matter of, like you said, the education and knowing, hey, which ingredients would offer those goals, because maybe someone wouldn't realize drinking cherry juice can really help reduce the inflammation in their body and things like that.
Yeah, and it's not always, you know, things you'd never heard of either.
Yes.
So your pictures are beautiful. Did you took these yourself, didn't you?
Oh, thank you.
I knew it.
And I took a lot of them, and then a good friend of mine, John Sheehan, helped me with some photos too.
Because I noticed a lot of them were on the same wooden table.
Yes.
Yeah. They're beautiful to look at, and they do make you hungry.
Oh, thank you.
I know you well enough that I know you tinker in the kitchen. Would you call it that, tinkering in the kitchen?
Yes, I do like to tinker. Yes, you're right.
You have a homemade sports drink recipe that is brilliant and easy. I flipped to that, and I'm like, well, I'm going to save myself some money this year.
Oh, thank you. You know, as a runner myself, and marathon after marathon, and training cycle after training cycle, to have all the sports drinks is tools, it's nice. But at the end of the day, for me personally, there's still ingredients in there that I don't want to be ingesting all the time.
Right.
So over time, I just thought, you know what, why not just make my own? And sure, it's important to still be able to train the gut and be able to take the sources during the races that you have available if you're not going to carry them. But this is one way to rotate other things in the diet. So instead of doing gels all the time, or maybe you're out of gels and you didn't realize you can grab some honey or maple syrup to really fuel your long run and at least get by that day. So
I love that.
I really wanted to strive for just the variability in using natural ingredients. And not everyone is striving, kind of back to that quality of life goal. Not everyone's striving for that big, long race. Sometimes it's just the person who wants to have a healthful diet, and they like to run and get in longer training bouts, and they want to know how they can naturally fuel their lifestyle.
No, it's great because, you know, they even have the little straws of honey. It's brilliant. Actually,
yeah.
You know, they're because they're easy to take with you. Well, the pictures are beautiful. They make me hungry looking at them. You know, you're constantly coming up with new stuff, I know. But there's simple things in here. You know, you got the snack stacks, which is fun.
Yeah. You know, I feel like, again, it's just practical. What things can, as a runner, I run as much as 80 to 100 miles a week with mm-hmm. two children and trying to still get in the work life and everything like that. And at the end of the day, what can be fast and fueling? And I just wanted to hit home on that because sometimes, you know, there's time constraints. You're just flat out tired from a busy day. I wanted to really keep it things that are accessible and easy and quick.
I love it. I have so much more to ask you. I'll have to give you a call because we're done. We're out of time. But the book, again, is Finish Line Fueling, an Essential Guide to Runner's Nutrition, Jackie Dykus. And we can get it again, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And
Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's through my publisher, Skyhorse Publishing. And Books A Million, if you're local in this area, they can grab it there too. And
your website is nutritionsuccess.org. Or .com.
Yeah, nutritionsuccess.org. And one other thing I wanted to add is we're going to expand on kind of these recipes, and my husband and I are opening a restaurant and brewery in Westfield, Indiana, where hopefully people can gain some of these great food, quality food concepts by dining at our restaurant.
We are going to do a whole show about that. So right before you open in a few months. So we'll have you back if you don't mind.
That sounds great. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, Jackie, appreciate you. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you. Have a good one.
And you're listening to Boomer Radio on Freedom 95.